It's time for the very first episode of Catching the Light, where my dear friend of 22 years and I are going to discuss life before going to Los Angeles, life during Los Angeles, and life ever since. Kind of like epics in time, I've actually given names to these three time periods. Before LA was sort of the anticipatory excitement for us, I'd say during Los Angeles was chaos. And afterwards, since then, now, is the death of my spirit. Since this is the maiden voyage of Catching the Light, I thought I would actually do a kind of ceremonial christening of sorts. Yeah. We don't have an actual hull of a ship, but I'm going to smash this over something. Jim, do you have something I can...
The corner of that TV would be fine.
No? Maybe later. People just drink it, we say. So my co-host, and I wouldn't have chosen anybody else.
Oh, man.
Please just say a thing or two about yourself.
Well, I'm 40 years old, and I met Ray. I met you, 1993, January, and in college. And I remember thinking, holy cow, I want to stick with this kid because he's going to be famous. He's going to be a famous movie director. And I want to be wherever he is, I want to be a part of that. That's amazing. And I wanted to do something similar. I wanted to be a musician. And I think a storyteller. If it wasn't going to be music, it was going to be something like that. And I never really had the courage to go try it until you had the courage to go do it first. And then that gave me the kick in the butt that I needed to go out and try it.
And we're certainly going to test your storytelling abilities today. Don't suck, man. I've been looking forward to this for some time. I hope that sitting here vis-a-vis you and I, we can tease out a few things from history, maybe stumble onto a couple life lessons. But I think this will be good. This will be good for both of us. I think this is going to be a good conversation, a good back and forth. I got to go to the bathroom. I'll be back in 10 minutes.
I was thinking about it. I thought, there's probably a lot of people who wanted to, at some point, quit their day job, sell everything on eBay, and go chase their dream, chase their rainbow, whether it's try out for the Yankees or go try to be a famous singer or an actor or what have you. And here are two people who tried it, did it, and got some level of success. I remember when you first came back from LA and you said you had auditioned for a sitcom like Saved by the Bell.
It was a spinoff of, I think, Mr. Belding.
Was that?
He was the spinoff character.
And I remember thinking, oh my God, it's all coming true. It's all happening. I knew this kid was brilliant. I knew he had talent. He went out there. He got an audition. He's only been there for a couple months.
He's going to be the brunette Zach Morris.
That's the beginning. And I thought, well, man, if he can do it, like, this is incredible. And that gave me a lot of courage to go out and try it. And then within a couple of years, there was a point where I know you emailed me and said, hey, I'm going to this premiere. I'm going to be walking the red carpet at this A-list movie premiere. And which blew me away. And at the same time, I was working at ABC Television on five of the top 10 shows in the nation. At the time, it was Lost, Grey's Anatomy, Desperate Housewives, Dancing with the Stars, Extreme Makeover: Home Edition. And I was a part in some small way. And you had your own success. And these were just two guys from upstate New York who didn't know anybody, had no connections and no knowledge of anything, just put their stuff in a car and drove.
Yeah.
And then it's a remarkable ride. And then here we are. Somehow we ended up here.
Yeah.
Which I guess we got to figure out.
It's been an interesting journey for sure. I don't know if it was a meteoric rise that we had out there, but I think that to a lot of people, I think there were bits and pieces along the way that I think people found interesting, at least stimulating.
What question you get asked more than anything about going to Hollywood?
It's always the same thing. It's always, who did you meet?
Right.
Who did you run into?
Right.
Yeah.
I get that too, and I feel like this was the neatest thing, and I never stopped getting starstruck. I always felt like an overexcited jackass, and I wanted to throw up every time I saw somebody. When you're at a stoplight here in the Finger Lakes, and you're at a stop, and you look over and you chuckle. He's like, ah, the guy in that car looks like Tom Cruise. But that happens, right? But then when you do that in L.A., if you look over and the guy in the next car looks like Tom Cruise, that's because it's Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
It's that kind of town.
It's surreal out there. It really is.
I remember people saying things like, yeah, I mean, just, you'd walk in where, yeah, Nicole Kidman was in front of me at Starbucks. And the other person wouldn't react. They'd be like, oh, really? Yeah. You know, I saw
barely worth mentioning.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. I saw Cameron Diaz at, you know, Walmart or something. And it just that kind of thing happened all the time. Who do you, would you say was your favorite? Did you ever
Away and, like, some celebrities, as you know, were a little more gracious than others. Some obviously. They would seem like they were just being bothered. They're probably tired of being harassed all the time, and rightfully so. I get that. I remember the first thing was literally the first two or three days that I was out there with the girl that I went out there with, and we were at Ralph's. We were at the grocery store, and we're sitting there. I don't know. We're shopping for paper towels or something, and I turn around and I look at her, and the color has gone out of her face. She's like, ah. And I thought she was having a stroke. I'm looking at her. She's like, like, so I look over her shoulder. It's Jenny Garth
from 90210. Yeah.
Right? And she had her baby with her, you know, and she was shopping for like dish soap or something. She was so human
right.
in that moment, and it was sobering. I mean, you know, the blood started rushing to my head real quick too. But then I think after that, from that point forward, it's like, wow, they're people. She shops. She doesn't have someone doing her shopping for her. She actually shops.
I never. Thought they were people. I all those years. Yeah. I was there for 7-8 years. You were there for 12, 15,
30. So I don't know. Forever. Yeah.
I think the first celebrity I ever met and talked to, I treated this girl like she was on Inside the Actor's Studio, and she came into the bar. I was bartending. My first job there was bartending, and she. I don't know how it came up because I didn't spot her, but I'm a huge Bill Murray fan. I mean, you know, he's one of my heroes, and I feel like I've been acting in his deleted scenes my whole life. I feel like, you know, I quote him and people know, and I think a lot of my mannerisms come from watching Stripes and Meatballs and Caddyshack.
Yes.
It's so young. In elementary school, I started picking up on that. Anyway, this blonde-haired woman was sitting at the bar, and she's talking, and she said something like, "Don't you recognize me?" Or something like that. I don't know how it came about. I know I didn't initiate. Maybe we were talking about acting, or are you an actor, or whatever. And she said, "Well, yeah, I was in Stripes." And I just thought, like, I'm going to throw up all over this bar right now. Oh, my God, one of my favorite movies.
Someone who's in the same room as Bill Murray.
And someone, right, because this is pretty... And I said...
Someone who breathed in the same air molecules that he was
breathing. Like, yeah, like, so I'm trembling. And I said, I'm sorry. And I blank, and I eventually said, "Who were you?" I was trying to get that out. And she goes, "I was one of the mud wrestlers. I was the one who said, 'I can't believe you do that to a girl.'" And she acted it out. She actually said the line. And I was like, oh, it was like the DVD come to life. And I grilled her with 100 questions trying to figure out everything about that experience. And that's how I treated someone who in the credits was probably credited as like mud wrestler number one. And I treated her like she was, you know, Uma Thurman or whatever, you know, like she's Academy Award winner. And that was like my first real, and here I go, like, people say, who's the biggest name? And when Michael Douglas came into ABC, I thought, well, all right, that's the biggest icon I've ever seen up close. But the girl from Stripes let me talk to her. Like, I actually had we had a moment where we were actually being two people talking.
Right, and the movie that she was in was more instrumental in your upbringing than probably anything that Michael Douglas was in.
I loved Romance in the Stone, but it didn't shape how I approached the world and how I thought and talked and everything.
Right.
But hers did. So, I mean, that was remarkable.
When I was working at Sicily Italian Kitchen in Sherman Oaks, my first restaurant job out there, the very first celebrity that I talked to was, and I forgot his name, the original Flash Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
And that, which became a joke later in the movie Ted. Right?
Yeah.
He was in there with his wife and little child. And I looked at him, and you know, it was some years later. And
but
I,
you
recognized
him.
But I recognized him. You know, it took a couple seconds. I'm like, oh, it's Flash. You know, and the song, the Queen music starts going in my mind. It's like, doom, 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 Flash, doom, 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 right? And I'm like, oh, Tim. And I said to him, I said, you were Flash Gordon. And he looked up at me and he said, almost with a tear in his eye, like, that was a long time ago. And then put his head back down and set his gaze back to the menu. Mm. And I felt that was sort of my first introduction to maybe life in LA after the expiration date a little bit, you know. But it was a sort of a somber moment, you know.
That I think knowing that I was going to be going home every Christmas and I wanted to have some kind of stories to tell, I was always trying to keep a log. So I ended up, every time I saw a celebrity somewhere, I'd write it down or I'd type it and save it in this document. But I would definitely, I always wanted to talk to them, but the unwritten rule in LA is, you know, you don't spook the thoroughbreds, you know, don't.
Yeah.
If you go up to them and ask for an autograph, then everyone's going to do it, and then they'll leave. So no one will get to say they saw them. So I remember we were in line at Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man, and I heard this voice, and I'm like, I know that voice. I just know, and it was just, it was that, there's only one person who sounds like Adam Sandler, and I'm like, kind of looking around, and the girl in the woods, what are you doing? I'm like, you don't hear that? And I'm looking around, and I go, like, oh my God, there's Miles Copeland, the manager of the police, and she's like, I don't know what. Only I would know that.
How many women wouldn't know that?
Right,
not many.
And then there, but then I spot him, and nobody's saying anything to him. He's just in line at Spider-Man, and then, like I said, they're just people.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a moment where I got to say, and so that I think people, when I would tell stories back home, they wouldn't even care if I talked to people or not. They were just like, "Wow, you were that close to Adam Sandler. You were standing that close. You were in the same theater."
I don't know if this happened to you, but time and time again, someone would come into the restaurant, or I'd be maybe out at a bar. And I'd see someone, you know, their shoulder touching my shoulder, or maybe I'm waiting on them at the restaurant. And it would only be until about 3 hours later, and it would come to me, I should have said this.
Yeah.
Why didn't I? You know, and as a struggling actor, you want some commonality.
Yeah.
Just any way in. You know, you went to the, from the same state, the same city, you went to the same school, you're just something, anything. And I think of all the celebrities, the last celebrities that I came in contact with in LA before I left to go to law school was Michael Gross and Meredith Baxter Burney from Family Ties.
Now, favorite show
of all
favorite
time, show for both of us.
Yeah,
just, we talk about instrumental in,
oh
in
my,
us
yeah,
growing up.
Holy cow!
I felt like I was waiting on my mom and dad, and I had nothing. I was so giddy with,
yeah,
you know, like I was nervous, and yeah, oh my God, he likes chocolate. You know? Like, I couldn't come up with anything, and it was afterwards. I'm laying in bed, then I'm like, oh. The things, like, I should have done something like play on words with the word family, or, you know, just anything. I'm like, oh, and these two were working with Michael J. Fox for years.
A hero.
Yeah, a hero.
When I knew I was leaving L.A., and I knew it didn't matter, I could be as uncouth as I wanted to be, we were auditioning hosts for a game show called Set for Life that nobody, I don't think, ended up watching. It was on ABC. They aired it. And we had brought in C. Thomas Howell to audition. Now, again, like, I say that name, and there's probably a lot of people who don't know who that is, but for me, huge.
I mean, The Hitcher, for the Outsiders.
Red Dawn. E.T. Like,
that's right.
And so he came in, and he was so cool. So, I mean, like, and what was neat was that I had to sort of entertain him, because there was some kind of hiccup where we didn't have everything ready, and he just had to sit there, and we were just both sitting there like, and this was before smartphones that really kind of took off. It was before the iPhone came out. So there wasn't really much. Like, cell phones weren't what they were now, where everyone's glued
right,
and just surfing the web.
Right.
So he was just kind of there, and I was kind of there, and I just launched into it. I treated him like, all right, we're on Inside the Actor's Studio. I said, so, was there ever a role that you turned down that you just, like, oh my God, you know? And I just, and he was so gracious and so cool, and he was like, yep, Karate Kid. And I was like, oh my God, you turned down The Karate Kid? And we just started talking, and he was telling me anecdotes about, yeah, you know, on E.T., Spielberg had all these video games for us to play with, and we were, like, riding our bikes between takes and playing video games, and he made it, like, an atmosphere really for kids.
And he was, like, a real cinephile. He had a radio show on for a while where...
Did
he? Yeah. It was him and some other guy, and they would take calls, and they would just talk about movies. People would call him and ask him about his own, but, you know, he would also talk about, well, yeah, and I knew this guy, and he cast this movie, and he wrote that one, and remember that? He seemed to have a real enthusiasm for movies in general, you know, so that doesn't surprise me that he would have volleyed that back and forth with you.
And like, so, because now I teach high school, and when the kids hear that I worked in Hollywood, they're like, well, who'd you meet? And I'm like, I don't think you'd care. I mean, these kids were born in now, like, the freshmen I had this year were born in 2000. And the sophomores, you know, they don't know the 80s very well. Their parents have sat them down and made them watch E.T. and Star Wars and whatever. But if I say them by name, they're not going to get half these people. Like, I have this big list of people we saw, and they're just not going
right.
They don't care. But that's who I cared about. That's who
right.
mattered to me. Like, the fact that I got to sit down and do that. So sometimes, I don't know, I'd come home with those stories, and they were more for me than for anybody else. You know, I'm geeking out over meeting MC Hammer, and I'm not geeking out over meeting this other person that they... Like, I remember we were I was working, and Desperate Housewives had their either their first wrap party or their Christmas party, one of the two. And we were at this club that was closed off for just them. And Eva Longoria's over here, and is it Marsha Cross? Is it, you know, they're all there. And I remember I was with my wife, my at the time girlfriend, soon to be wife. And I just remember thinking, like, yeah, you know, like it didn't mm-hmm. like this is cool. This was nice to be here, but it didn't. Meanwhile, when I say that name, Eva Longoria, today, the kids are like, oh my God, you what? And I said, yeah, she was playing pool and I was next. You know, I just, can I have next game? You know?
Yeah.
And they were like, duh. And I was like, I felt nothing.
Did you tell them when she wouldn't give you the pool table, you smashed it over her head? You gotta tell that story.
I mean, that's, I don't know, it's just kind of funny, but I feel bad. Maybe should stop name dropping because it's such a loathsome thing to do, but
we haven't in so long.
I know. My God, I remember when you told me that you met the Karate Kid, the first friend Ralph Macchio made in Karate Kid.
And I thought that it was always a funny scene in the Karate Kid. That so he Danielson shows up, right? This kid befriends him, right? And this is the kid that Danielson did the karate chop. He did the kick into the gate in Encino at their new complex, and it knocked the kid down. And the kid was like, whoa, do you know karate? We're like, whoa, look at those moves. And Danielson, he's like, oh, a little bit at the YMCA. So they take him in. They all go to the beach. They're playing soccer. He's playing pretty well. He's got some moves. And then when Johnny, who is this first class, like five-time karate champion, beats him up, one of the lines of these kids was, where'd you find this kid, man? he's five times his size, right? Somehow he was supposed to prevail. Oh, it was like this David and Goliath. He was supposed to somehow beat him into the ground,
I don't hang out with kids who lose beach fights.
Yeah. You're like, come on, let's leave him here. Come on.
Let him bleed into the sand.
Yeah, yeah. He's the only one that stood up to him.
Right.
Come on. But I met him. I was playing the piano one night at this apartment complex on Woodman Avenue in Sherman Oaks. Okay. And he came over and he started talking to me. He said, oh, you play? And he said, I play too. And he sat down and he played. And by the end of the conversation, he said, oh, I was so-and-so, whatever his character's name was in Karate Kid. You know, I was the one that Ralph Macchio kicked over, blah, blah, blah. And then he was gone. I mean, just like that, he was sitting next to me on the piano stool. We were playing together. And then
that's someone only you and I would care about, I think. You know, it's funny. Someone asked, well, why would you ever want to leave this idyllic place? I mean, you're talking about the beach and San Diego's 2 hours this way, and San Francisco's a 6-hour drive that way, and Vegas is a 4-hour drive over here.
As though we ever had time to, you know, I mean, all that stuff, going to Zuma Beach, seeing the ocean, the traffic became so maddening.
Yeah.
I mean,
Tijuana is 3 hours south.
Yeah, know? We did that the first year we were out there, never again.
I remember when I turned a corner, and I was starting to feel like I was maybe getting a little too old. I was just about to hit 30, and Ben Affleck came in. I was working at ABC, and I freaked out because he was just, to me, there's very few bigger, you know, in the modern era. And he walked in, and my first reaction was to call my mom, and I got on the phone really quiet, like, Mom, you're never gonna believe this. Here, you know, Ben Affleck is here, and he's like 9 feet tall, and he's really nice, and he's like you would think that he would be like super gracious and funny and charming. And my mom's like, yeah, great, Ben Affleck. I'm okay. Yeah, you know what we did today? I'm like, oh, what would you do? We went to Chuck E. Cheese for your niece's third birthday, where she was crying in the ball pit, wondering where her uncle was, and just kept asking for you. So, but I'm glad you met Ben Affleck.
Yeah, say hi to Ben for us.
Yeah, right. You know, and I remember just feeling, oh, so small. There's some good old fashioned Italian Catholic guilt. It's exquisite.
Sure, and since you've been back, now you know the proximity is much closer. You're here. What's it like? How often do you see your family?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, now that I'm a high school, and I know I picked high school and I picked English, which means I made a job that was already hard, much, much more harder, because I have all these essays to grade.
Yeah.
Whereas other people go and they don't have essays. I have all these essays. So I do so much grading that I never see that niece, and I rarely see my parents. I see them less, oddly, now that I live 3 hours away by car, 4 hours away by car, than I did when it was 5 hours by plane. And that's a hard pill to swallow. That's
the one thing I never anticipated was, I used to say to myself, oh, I'm only getting home once or twice a year. And I would always work on Thanksgiving. Every Thanksgiving was a big day and night at the restaurant. So I was never able to to have Thanksgiving dinner. I was never able to break bread with my family. Occasionally on Christmas, sometimes in the summers. But there were years where it was only once a year. I think I missed a year entirely one time. The thing was, though, it made it more special. You know, you knew you only had 4 or 5 days, so you would try to cram in. It just, you know, the embrace, the hugs, the all the conversations were that much more impactful because you knew, you didn't know when you were going to have another one again. And, you know, and there were a lot of, there were a lot of sad stories. I mean, I, you know, in all my time in LA, there were auditions that I thought I botched. There were near misses. There were ones that I thought I got and didn't. The phone didn't ring. There were money troubles. You know, there was a lot of that. And I remember at one point, my mother used to say to me, she'd say, you know, we'd talk on the phone, and at the end of, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, it'd be a Sunday night. And I wasn't aware of what I was telling her. I just was kind of giving her the update of what's been going on for the last week or two. And she'd have this thing that she'd say, is anything good happening? And that would make me feel terrible, you know? So I would make this concerted effort. I'm like, you know what? Chin up. I'm out in the sun. You know, I should be thankful for what I've got. I stopped getting so down about the traffic and working in a restaurant.
And, you know, it was very liberating to be out there. I mean, I felt like that movie Yes Man with Jim Carrey. I felt like I turned into a yes man because when I was there, I felt like the rules didn't apply anymore because everyone I knew, every real friend and family member were 3,000 miles away. So what did it matter if I grew my hair long? What did it matter if I wore leather pants? I always wanted to.
Now, were you an actual yes man? Because you were the only one that saw that movie.
Was that... Oh, God. I mean, that's low. It's just one of those things where I felt like every time someone asked me something within reason, I could say yes. I remember... And I say within reason because I was at the bar one night and this guy and a girl came in and this guy asked me to take his girlfriend home to have relations with her because he was too tired to keep up with her. Mm-hmm. And I said no because I felt like they were going to kill me with an axe.
Right.
And that so within reason. But when someone would say, that's true, when someone would say things like, let's go to Vegas, and it was a Tuesday at like 8 p.m., I'm like, Vegas, but how do we... We have to take like 4 hours of drive there. It'll be midnight. What are you saying? Like, we're going to gamble for like 2 hours till 2 a.m. and then get in the car and come back, be here by 6, go to Starbucks and go back to work? And the my friends would be like, yeah. As if this was just what
of course.
You do. Of course.
It's part and parcel with living out here.
Yeah. And I said, yes. Yeah. Yes, I want to do that. And I made those kind of yeses a lot. And I feel like when your mom says, well, didn't anything good happen, you had those too.
Sure. You know? Sure, sure. And the Vegas thing is interesting because I think the longer we were out there, I felt like I was becoming less energetic. You know, I felt like there was when we first got out there, Vegas was, I mean, it was such an adventure. And we had plenty of those overnights where we'd get out of work at 10 o'clock at night. Maybe we didn't have to be at work until 5 o'clock the next day. And we would do these kamikaze missions. It'd be
like
one
Swingers.
In the morning.
Like the movie Swingers.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Right. Exactly. Exactly like Swingers. Yeah. It was exactly like that. And we probably did that 7, 8 times in the first maybe 3, 4 years, right? And I remember the last year I was out there, my friend Angelo.
Whose friend was in NSYNC or whatever.
So, Angelo, we're working a shift at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. I think it's a Saturday night. It might be a Sunday night. He gets a phone call. He's in the back in the dessert room. He comes over to me after the phone call, and he says, hey, we're going to Vegas.
We're just going.
I said, what? No, man, I worked a double. I've been here since 10 a.m. No, man. He's like, Chris Kirkpatrick's birthday. Is in Vegas right now. He just invited us. We're going. Now, my head would have exploded if he had said that to me 7, 8 years earlier.
Right.
He said, we're going to Chris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC's birthday in Vegas. Let's go. And actually was like, no.
Because you
I'm going to
like,
bed.
You were like 30 at the time,
I'm going
time,
to bed.
Right?
Yeah. I'm going to bed. He ended up dragging me. I went. But I did go.
Right.
But it took a lot of coaxing. A lot of coaxing.
Which is amazing because if you told that to anyone back home, they'd be like, what on earth? Why are you even thinking about that?
Right.
Why are you even considering? Just
right.
go.
Right.
You
know? I these moments of reverie, I just be like, oh, my bed. My bed. Oh, so good. It cradles me.
Oh, my God. I think there's that scene in Rocky III where Mick says, you know, you did the one thing you can't do. You got civilized.
Yeah.
And you and I got civilized. We actually made L.A. into a normal place to be when it's anything but.
Yep.
There's no normal existence when you have all this stuff swirling around. And people would ask me, why did you leave? And I'd say, you know, it's kind of like living in Hollywood, working in that business, is like working at a circus or living in a merry-go-round. Very fun at first, and then after a while, you just want off. You just want, like, get me off this place. And that's what it was, exhausting. To how many of those Vegas trips can you make? And how, like, how many of your friends from the East Coast came out to visit, and you had to show them all around and do all the touristy stuff? And I know this sounds awful because we're complaining about it, but it became like any other place on earth. And I think there's a lesson in that, that even Playland became a grind, became...
Right, right.
You know, there's got to be a lesson in that, about the grass being greener, and wherever you go, there you are, and your problems follow you, and, you know, it...
And you mentioned being civilized, and I think that, you know, you get older, I think invariably you become a little less self-involved. I mean, that does happen. And I honestly, probably the greatest asset you have when you first get out there, be it 22, 24, 25, is that it's all about you. Mm. And you sort of need to be that way. I mean, you sort of need to be myopic in the way that you see things, and it's got to be that way. You're not thinking about starting a family. You're not thinking about, you know, buying a house. It's you.
And a lot of people go, you get a lot of casualties that way.
Absolutely. No
doubt.
Relationships
who think they're going to be real relationships, meanwhile, you're so selfish that you...
That's right.
You kind of destroy, you know, you let these fall by the wayside.
I look back over the debris field of relationships in L.A., and I to this day, I still feel bad.
Yeah.
I still feel bad about some of it. I feel like I was so careless.
I knew that I was never going to have a meaningful one if I stayed there.
Right.
It was just something, and I knew what that something was. It was because every time we went out to a bar, chances were you were going to make out with somebody at the bar or get too inebriated and make some bad decisions. And there was when that was always around... What kind of quality person are you going to meet that way?
Well, and, you know, and they say that everyone in L.A., it's a bunch of adult children, right?
Yeah.
And you've heard that before, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. We haven't really talked about whether or not having kids, whatever. I mean, you and I are both, you more than me, maybe, perhaps, but we're now sort of in domesticity a little bit, you know?
I'm a house cat now.
Yeah, right, house cat. But I think when you get out there, you are a child. I was at the grocery store here in town a few months back, and I'm in line, and there's this little boy in front of me, right? And his mother's putting all the items on the belt, and this kid's, you know, he's grabbing gum off the thing, and, you know, he's doing spins, and I look down at him, he looks up at me, and he goes, me, 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 me! Like, you? Me! And I feel like when we got out there, that was us, like, me!
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I think it served us well. I think the problem is, again, we hit about 30, and, you know, I think some of that stuff just started getting a little stale. We started missing our family a little bit. We probably wanted a little more.
I wanted some substance, and it was, I kept thinking I was going to get it, and I never came out there. I mean, they have churches out there, but I didn't know anyone who ever went to one. You know, like, I didn't know anyone who had, everyone was out there on a mission. They didn't come there to make friends. I mean, they came there because, what I saw was, everyone who came there was the star of their school. They were the hottest girl, the hottest.
It's the creme de la creme from all the cross section, all across the country. It's the creme de la creme.
And they all want the exact same thing.
Yep.
And they'll step on you if they have to get it.
And you're not a special snowflake anymore when you get out there. That's an adjustment period.
Oh my God. I remember it when I was at ABC and it was casting season. That's what they called it, casting season. I remember walking, I went to lunch and I walked past the lobby. I was on the top floor where all the president and everyone of ABC was. And I remember it, because that's where they did the big time casting, the casting for the big shows like Lost and Grey's Anatomy. And I went to the elevator, and as I walked by, it was in every seat. We had all these couches and chairs, the most incredible bevy of the most gorgeous women I've ever seen. And in a strange way, they all kind of looked alike, because it was just a big room full of Victoria's Secret model looking girls. And I remember when asking about why certain girls were cast and not others, and they would say things like, well, that was, she had the right height, she had the right hair color.
Yep.
Because at that point, it's like, it was like picking out donuts. They didn't really, and they were all good, they could all read lines, you know? And then the next day it was boys, and it was the same thing. It was like an entire field of Johnny Depps and Keanu Reeves's out there.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, I can't believe that what they must feel like. I was almost kind of glad that I never had the acting bug.
Right.
Because how would I'm an ugamug. I'm sitting amongst a field of Johnny Depps. Like, what the hell am I going to do? It was crazy. And then,
I mean, out there, if you're not a 10 out there, that might mean that the symmetry of your eyes and your nose perhaps isn't, it's not like the golden symmetry. It's not quite right, you know. So that means maybe you're only like a 7 or an 8. Where, you know, you come back here, we're upstate New York, you might stop somewhere off the thruway to, like, a Tim Hortons to get a coffee, and someone comes to give you the coffee, and there's an actual horn coming out of the head, right? You're not going to see a horn coming out of a head in L.A.
Right. I remember my wife, my now wife's best friend, she was on Saved by the Bell for an episode or two, and she was one of those kind of bit characters who...
Oh, she did it, huh? She made it. She was on the show.
She was on the show. And, oh, come on, hey, she's just a girl. But she was one of those people who had worked saying 2-3 lines on 5-6 shows. And she was up for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It was down to, like, her and Sarah Michelle Gellar. Is that who ended up getting it? Sarah Michelle Gellar? Or Jennifer Love Hewitt? I confuse those two. I don't even know who those...
On the Vampire Slayer?
Yeah.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Okay, it was, like, down to those two.
Right? I think so.
And she was in the finals. It was her. It was down to the two of them. And she was... If I remember the story right, she got into a fight with her boyfriend, and to as therapy, she dyed her hair like Kool-Aid pink or something, or, you know, just to be playful and to be like, oh, I hate guys, and did that to her hair, and then showed up to the audition, but her headshot had her blonde, and she's a beautiful girl. And I remember, if I remember the story right, she didn't get it because they were like, what happened to her hair? Like, we thought we were getting this, and she's like, oh, but I can dye it back, and they
moved
on. Too late.
Too late.
They just... Yep. They're like, oh, that's not what was advertised, and we're just going. And she had talent, and she was great, and, you know, still is. But I just remember hearing that, going, oh, if this business is that, if it comes down to that, I thought anyone who had talent and was motivated and was a good person, wanted it bad enough, your dreams could come true, because that's what they told us.
Yep.
That's what they told all of us, and that is not what I learned out there. I learned that it was more about luck and connections and being at the right place at the right time.
It can be so unforgiving. You know, it's not even that there's a window per se. It's that the window flits in and out of existence here and there, and you have to reach up and you have to jump up and grab it as soon as it happens. You know, like her hair. That's it. Disqualified.
I was there for a week. I wanted to be a rock star, right? I wanted to be Sting Bono. And the first kid I met said, I work at Sony. Like Sony Epic Columbia. We're talking Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Pearl Jam, like, holy cow. He said, we're having a 4th of July barbecue. I just got in L.A. in June 25th, and I'm going to the Sony Executive Record Label barbecue within a couple weeks. And I'm thinking, I'm going to walk out of there with a record deal, because I'm me. I'm special. I'm a precious snowflake, you know, like I'd been told. Very special. And talent wanted a bad, good person. I had the qualifications. So I remember I was sitting down at the table, and I'm at a table with my first ever L.A. friend, Stefan, and all these Sony Columbia Epic executives. And I turned to this woman to my right, and I said, so. And I put my burger down, and I said, I would like a record deal. And I said it just like that, like, full of confidence, because I figured, what's the worst going to happen? They don't know if I can sing. They don't know how good I play anything.
Is it confidence or arrogance?
Really, it was stupidity. It was...
Naivete.
So she goes, would you now? And I said, yes, I'd like a record deal. She goes, I'd be happy to give you one. I can give you one here today. And I said, really? Oh, my God. Now, remember, it was 1999. And she says, yeah, all you got to do is look like Ricky Martin, sing like Ricky Martin, dance like Ricky Martin, and we'll sign you right now. And she could see that I was not putting it together what she meant. And she goes, we don't go after what's brand new. That was the Hispanic explosion. If you remember, that was the summer of J-Lo, Mark Anthony, Ricky Martin. It was the big... Even like Lou Bega and like everyone on the radio, that was the big thing. And she said, we go after what's big, what's hot. And what's hot right now is Latin. And if you are hot in Latin and you could fit in on the radio, then we'll take it. Otherwise, and she was telling me stories
like,
about,
hola, mujer, desde aquí hasta la eternidad. Ah.
Nice. I wish I was that quick. I was more like, ¿dónde está the bathroom?
It's baño.
There you go.
Next time you go to Tijuana.
I mean, she was telling me stories how they had dropped Joan Osborne. Do you remember What If God Was One of Us? She won a Grammy.
That was her one big hit.
She won a Grammy.
And then they just kind of kicked her to the
curb.
They
kicked her
to
the curb. Because her second album didn't sound like it had another God Is One of Us. And they were telling me how if you could rewind the clock, you know, Elvis wouldn't have gotten a record deal. And and Journey would have been dropped way before Don't Stop Believin', and because you needed to sell 2 million copies out of the gate to even break even with your deal.
Yep.
And so, and if they didn't hear a single on the second album, there would be no second album. There was no guarantee. They didn't cultivate artists anymore. So when she was, I was there for only 2 weeks. So the kind of the new car smell rubbed off pretty quick because I was like, oh my God, is this what it's really like?
Well, speaking of rewinding the clock, I think it's time for our movie quote game. We have...
I've been looking forward to this.
Me too. This is going to be fun. We asked my very precocious, enormously talented niece Jackie to read some quotes from films. Now, I don't know which films you chose. You have no idea which films I chose.
I picked five. I don't know if
quotes. I picked at least five. I think we'll probably listen to all of them here. And we're going to see if the other person can figure out which film the line is from.
How old is she?
She's... Oh, thanks a lot, man.
Sorry.
She's a little
kid, though, is what you're saying.
She's eight.
She's elementary school.
She's eight.
Okay.
She's eight. I know she's eight. So I think let's put these on.
Okay. I'm excited. This is fun.
We're going to keep score here.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yep.
You're a real cinephile like myself, so I think this should be a nip and tuck contest.
Okay.
Let's do this.
All right, who's his first?
I don't know. I don't know who's his first. Let's do one for you. Let's do one for you first.
Okay. Hey, woman, listen here. Since your old man here ain't got no heart, maybe you'd like to see a real man. Yeah, I bet you stay up all night dreaming about a real man, don't you? Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you bring your pretty little self over to my apartment tonight, and I'll show you a real man.
Do you know that was the one? I was going to use that for you. Rocky III, Clubber Lang.
Very good.
I was going to use that for you, and I thought to myself, I'm not sure that a little kid should be saying those words.
Oh, I don't care. Okay, here comes one for me.
Lose, I don't lose. I win, I win. I'm a lawyer. That's my job. That's what I do.
That's Keanu Reeves from The Devil's Advocate. Excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, she did a good reading there. Better than him, maybe. 1-1.
Yep. The video's cool. Look.
And the library gone. Sealed off. Favorite. We'll have us a little book barbecue in the yard. We'll see flames come out. We'll dance around it like wild Indians. You understand me? Catching my drift, or am I being obtuse?
When you pitched me this idea, you said, yeah, and we'll take off points if you laugh. How are we
going to
make it
through
this?
Forget that rule.
Oh, my God.
Forget that rule.
Shawshank.
Yeah.
The warden.
Good job.
Oh, my God. I'm crying.
You're building a rat ship here, a vessel for seagulls. And if you think you're preparing these minnows for manhood, you better think again, because I say you're killing the very spirit of this insolution proclaimed insults.
That is Scent of a Woman. It's Al Pacino, very good. 2-2.
The only thing I have to eat is Yoo-Hoo and Cocoa Puffs. So if you want anything else, bring it with you, okay?
This one's a little more obscure. You know the film.
That's Few Good Men.
Yes.
But
good
holy
job.
Cow, that
good
was
job.
That was rough.
Good job.
I got scared there for a second.
Good job.
Tom Cruise.
Okay, do the next one.
Oh, dear Lord Jesus, this can't be happening, man. This can't be happening, man. That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over. What are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Wow.
I thought...
This one...
The game over, man. Game over. I thought that was it. I thought...
Interestingly, I think that might be game over for this contest.
Wow.
Whew. I don't know.
Game over, man. Game over. It's Bill Paxton in Aliens when he's freaking out. Game over, man.
That's not fair.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
All right, 3-2. 3-2, Warren.
I'm crying. I'm sorry.
Barnes been shot 7 times and he ain't dead. Does that mean anything to you, huh? Barnes ain't meant to die. The only thing that can kill Barnes is Barnes.
Platoon.
Yeah.
Was Behringer Barnes? Is he?
Yes.
Okay.
That was yes.
We're almost done, right? I mean, this is
okay. So it's
good one. Okay.
Was it 4-3?
What difference does it make where you buy underwear? What difference does it make? Underwear is underwear. It is underwear wherever you buy it, in Cincinnati or wherever.
Wow. She said Cincinnati perfectly. That's Rain Man.
Good.
All right. So I guess I got to get you here.
We got a lot of crews in this.
Yep. You certainly can tell who our heroes are. Come on, Jackie. Get him.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice chante.
Chante. I have to tell you, chante is too strong for me, but that's I prefer something sweeter. That's Silence of the Lambs.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, nice
I think there's... Is there one more?
Is there one more?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's 4-3, Warren. Right? 4-2? Yeah.
Okay. Next one.
I had the most absurd nightmare. I was poor and no one liked me. I lost my job. I lost my house. Penelope hated me, and it was all because of this terrible, awful Nigro.
Did she say Nigro?
Yeah, she did. It was N-E-G-R-O was the word.
We're going to hell.
I know. But, I mean, I thought, you know.
Okay.
It was a...
Oh.
Do you need to hear it again?
Is that possible, Jim?
Sure.
Okay.
Very famous movie, and...
Okay.
This...
Okay. Next one.
I had the most absurd nightmare. I was poor, and no one liked me. I lost my job. I lost my house. Penelope hated me, and it was all because of this terrible... awful Nigro.
Penelope.
It's not one that you and I beloved together, but I know you've seen it. It's a huge, huge movie, a huge actor, and you know all that.
Penelope. I think you might have got me again.
Trading Places.
Oh.
Dan Aykroyd.
I haven't seen that in so long.
Really?
Maybe from the concept, I should have been able to piece that together.
I mean, that wasn't one of the ones we ever really saw together.
All right.
So that could have been unfair to pick.
All right. Is there one more for Warren?
Sure.
I know there was one that I wanted you to hear in particular.
I'm telling you the law out here to me. Don't push it. Don't push it. Or I'll give you a war you won't believe. Let it go. Let it go.
That I don't know.
First Blood.
Oh, jeez.
He's got the knife to Danny's throat.
See, now that I haven't seen that in 20 years. Yeah. Wow, okay. Was that the one you wanted me to hear?
No.
Did you know he's broke? He is a broke and working Jared for McGuire. You for free. Broke, 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 broke. I'm sorry. I'm just not as good as the insults as she is.
Yeah.
Jackie did a wonderful job.
Yeah.
I think there's one other.
I'm going to make Gretzky's head bleed for a super fan.
Swingers.
I think there's one more.
Swingers.
That's good.
Yeah.
I thought that was a little... I thought that might stump you.
You know, I think I might have found a companion. A companion for that long walk to the light. Do you mind if I put my arm around you?
I have no idea what that is either.
No? Oh, I picked the wrong ones.
No, what's that?
Cape Fear.
Man, yeah.
Do you mind if I put my arm around you?
No, I mean, that's amazing. I know. I haven't seen it in 20 years.
I think this is the last one.
Well, what am I supposed to do? You won't answer my calls. You change your number. I mean, I'm not going to be ignored. Dan.
That is just like Glenn Close said it.
Yep.
Fatal Attraction.
I think there's one last one. This is it. That's it?
Shoot, I should have sent you more.
All right. Oh, you won.
Yeah, well, I may have picked some that were offsides.
So we had a Dickens of a time trying to come up with a title.
Yeah, we did.
For our show, and we were going back and forth for a while. It was all over the place.
We should have a contest to see who can name the show better.
Yeah, right. But, you know, we were kind of bandying back and forth. When it finally came down to, it was Catching the Spotlight, Chasing the Spotlight, and then you said, I don't like Spotlight, so we truncated that to just The Light. And then I remember I said, well, how about, I always wanted to do a play on words. You know, I wanted there to be a dual meaning, right? So, and I guess what we came up with is, if there is a dual meaning, I guess it's photography relate, I guess. I mean, maybe.
I mean, we're talking about the spotlight and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Not everybody even wants the spotlight.
Right. I think what we settled on, I think, is good.
Sure.
I think
sure.
It's good. But so one of my ideas was, I said, what about After the Light? And you said, you came back with a message in the email and you said, it kind of sounds like a conversation between two elders, and you did this sort of in quotes, like, "Hey Donald, did you watch After the Light last night?" Like they're sitting in an old home somewhere. Like, did you listen to After the Light? And I was laughing because you chose the name Donald. Like of all the names, I mean,
it sounded like this is going to be one of those programs about what happens after you die.
Right.
You know, and I think it was like, they're covering reverse mortgages this
week. Right. And I envisioned like Donald and his wife Martha was like, well, turn it off. And he's like, there's no knob, Martha. There's no knob. There's nothing for me to press. It's like, I can't listen to this. I can't listen to this anymore. But I think what we settled on, I think works. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe someone else will send an email in and be like, yeah, why don't you just call it this? And it'll be something we never thought of.
If anyone has an idea that they think that just escaped us, let us know.
I woke up this morning trying to think of
stuff. Right until the very end. It just got to the point where I'm like, I don't want to labor over this anymore. Let's just finish this and do it. So let's talk a little bit about life now.
Yeah. Oh, shoot.
You're teaching.
Yeah.
You're married. You didn't invite me to the wedding.
I didn't invite
Let's move
anybody.
On.
the idea that you leave... Well, what's that Bible quote where it's like, when I was a child, I did childish things, and now I'm a man, and I stopped doing the childish things, whatever. I guess there's something to that about, at what point do you finally just say, all right, it's time to start being responsible and think about things like healthcare, which you don't care about in LA. You eat ramen noodles 7 times a week and at 3 in the morning, it doesn't matter, until you have to go to the doctor. And then all of a sudden your health matters.
Right.
Your retirement, stuff like that. So,
although health did always kind of matter to me. I mean, I've had cancer 17 times.
It always was something. I remember the time that you had, like, you thought you had a heart attack and you went to the hospital and you were drinking Red Bull. Just because you drank it for breakfast shouldn't have been alarming. Told you,
well,
maybe.
Well, they sold it in a store. It's in a store.
And you always had a coffee with you. You always had like a something with caffeine in it.
Yeah.
I remember you spent the night.
I was stimulated for 10 years straight.
And
basically.
They put the suction cups all over you. And, you know, I remember that happened. And
I remember I called my mother. I was laying on the gurney in the hospital. They wouldn't even let me get off the gurney. They made me, you know, they learned when they found out about my dad.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, let's take this one seriously. Little would they know, 17 trips later, they'd be like, get him out of here. So just lock the door. But I remember I called my mother. I'm on my cell phone. I'm laying there. I'm strapped in. She's like, hello. I said, hey, so listen, I'm in the hospital. She goes, oh, dear God. Oh, dear God.
There's no easy way to break that to your mom.
There isn't.
You know?
There isn't. But you're right. I mean, you get to a point where you feel like you're living without a safety net.
Well, with George Clooney, there's a story. I read a thing where he told his parents he was going to go to Hollywood, and he was either going to succeed or die trying. And their response was, yeah, but you don't get that out of those options, we don't want you to die. You know, like that. So, and I think everyone does go to LA with that thing of, I'm either, there's no plan B. Because that's what he told his parents. If there was a safety net, then I would rely on it being
right
there.
Right.
And so I think everyone just kind of goes. And then that
some people have the safety net. Some people have the trust fund babies that go out there that, you know, the mom and dad put them in an apartment. You are universes ahead of anybody else who just kind of gets off the turnip truck with $100 to their name.
Well, I tried telling my parents that because I actually graduated from college and taught for 3 years first. That was my plan B.
You surrendered a lot. You surrendered a lot more than I did.
Well, they didn't even buy it. They were like, nope, you're throwing that away. So I thought I had a pretty good safety net. And maybe that's part of why I didn't become the next big thing. But there was a point where I just started thinking, oh, my God, am I really going to be going to the bars and you know, pressing the flesh and trying to be somebody at 40, 50? When does it end? Yeah. And then invariably you meet that person who says, oh, well, you know, Morgan Freeman didn't hit it big till he was 50, and neither did Dennis Franz. And, like, they just start spitting out all these names who
Dustin Hoffman, you've heard that a million times. The Graduate, he was 40-something, yeah.
So, I mean, those people say those things. It's like, oh, man, am I giving up too soon? But the girl that I met at the time, she pretty much had it, too. She went out there to be an actress, tried acting school. I remember she said, like, Paul Rudd was in the next class up. And in her class was a kid who got a line on Dazed and Confused, and the kid who was in Clueless, who Alicia Silverstone had a crush on through the whole movie and then didn't. But all those people, she had, like, connection. And
the metrosexual character.
Yeah. And her friend who went on to be in Saved by the Bell and had those. So she had...
Did you say Saved by the Bell again?
I'm sorry. Come on.
I'll stay.
I just felt like we got to start thinking about this stuff. And she was... I met this girl who said, I could settle down. I could do that, too. And now we're in Pennsylvania going, what on earth have we done?
I had a conversation with you after you left. You left before I did. And it was a Sunday night, I think. And we hadn't talked in a little while. And I asked you what you were doing on your weekend. And you said, I'm cleaning gutters. You know, bought a house. Do you remember the movie Starman?
A little. Okay, I mean, I liked it. I remember liking it, but...
Jeff Bridges plays this alien from outer space, and his vocabulary, I mean, his grasp of language and colloquialisms, whatever, it's very minimal. So he's just picking up things that he's hearing. So he's hitching a ride to Arizona, to Cratertown, to rendezvous with the ship so he can get home, right? And he's with this old guy in a truck, and the old guy turns to him, and he says, so what do you do for a living? And... Starman had heard earlier in the movie, he was talking to somebody or overheard someone say, I make maps. Okay. So he, you know, comes to his brain, he said, oh, here's a response, I make maps. So he says, I make maps. And the guy says, you make good money doing that? And Jeff Bridges says, I make maps. So he repeats himself, not because he's being clever or sarcastic, he repeats himself because that's all he knows to say.
Sure.
Because it's, right. But the guy takes like he's being... sarcastic, like I make maps. I don't make it. Duh, it's maps. What do you think? I'm a cartographer, right? And the guy's like, yeah, I guess you wouldn't, huh? I said, so how's? You said the gutters. I'm cleaning the gutters. I said, so how's that? And you said, I'm cleaning gutters. Now you were being sarcastic. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's I cut the lawn now, and I instinctively want to call my dad for $10, like. Where's my prize? I mean, like, I just did a chore, and it's not. I hate it, and I'm like, oh, I just have to do that. That's what I have to do. And my wife asked me the other day. We were walking around the house because a bird hit the house. It just these birds are flying, and then they die. Right? It's just that terrible, awful thing. We had to clean up a bird. And she said, she just looked at me and said, "Do you ever get the feeling like you're playing the role of a grown up?" And I said, "Yes. That's how I feel every day. I don't feel 40. I still feel like I'm the same." Kid who met you when we were 18 and wanted to go to LA to be stars. I don't. So the idea that I'm cleaning a gutter is so weird to me.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm totally faking it.
Yeah.
And thank God I don't have kids because I think they would look at me and expect to know how to parent too.
I don't know that I ever feel quite right when I have a suit on. You know, I have the shirt and the tie and I look in the mirror and I'm so used to just seeing this. You know, I don't know that I'll ever feel completely comfortable. Whereas I think a guy that, you know, went right through business school and graduate school, whatever, and went right to work at some Fortune 500 firm would always feel more comfortable in that suit as opposed to anything else. But I don't know if that'll ever be me.
In all fairness, though, you usually don't like wearing any shirt.
That's true.
That's where you're. I mean,
that's true. That's true.
How about you? I mean, so now you're going to be a lawyer, or are a lawyer, teacher and a lawyer, who were at one time actor.
I'm not going to be a teacher and a lawyer. How much time do you think I have? What? Come on. I get my master's too.
Do you sit there going, all right, I'm about to go and be on stage though, because I'm going to go, I have to go present a speech in front of people.
I think it's the law certainly isn't like it is on TV. I think there are moments where I wish it was. It isn't quite as theatrical. It's a lot of negotiating on the phone. It's a lot of, you know, it's more private. It's not as much bombast.
You could have a camera for every phone call, and you could film your phone calls. And
yep.
Do it like this podcast and have like multiple cameras.
Yep.
And...
No, I mean, I do have some ideas. I'm thinking like the very first trial that I have, I want to hand glide into the courtroom. Like, I do have some ideas, right. For sure. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's the grass is always greener thing. I think when I was in L.A., I just wanted to be proud of what I was doing, and I was tired socially of saying, yeah, I'm another one of those. And that really, after a while, started to kind of erode my own self-confidence. I mean, I knew what my abilities were. I knew who I was. But you put that apron on over and over and over and over again, and it almost becomes like an actual appendage. I mean, it's such a part of you. You know, I wanted to burn it in effigy when I finally left. I mean, it felt great. It was invigorating. But now there are moments where, again, with the grass is always greener, I miss some of those freedoms. You know, I would love to go in and work a shift. I would love to go back in and just have fun with some of those people and stand at the bar and talk to my friends and, you know, look forward to a drink afterwards at 11 o'clock at night up the street.
And I would call you and you'd say, yeah, George Clooney came into Firefly. And you'd say, like, it was no big deal.
Right.
I remember that.
Right.
Well, you said I wanted to do something I was proud of. I mean, you were in a movie that was on Lifetime that aired. Like, I missed it. I don't know how I missed it, because I don't know where I was.
I do, because it was out for 4 minutes.
Yeah,
if you blinked, you missed it.
But your name would have been on the screen, right? I mean, that's a really cool thing. It's something to be proud of. I remember we roomed in L.A. for a little while, and I went to sleep, and the next morning you said, you'll never believe who was on our couch last night. And it was a 2-time Academy Award-winning actor, and I thought... In our house. And I just remember thinking, like, I wasn't even there, I was unconscious. And
right.
And yet, I sort of, that kind of gave me enough to get by a little while longer.
Yep.
Like, that was a success.
Yep.
You were hanging out with somebody huge, and that was a little bit of a success. And then, you know, like I said earlier, you walked the red carpet at this big time movie premiere, and you weren't in the movie, but it didn't matter to me. I was like, that's a success, because how many of your friends who were working shifts that night were not walking a red carpet and having the paparazzi take pictures wondering, is this the next big thing?
Right, right.
Yeah. So I think that's a huge... I mean, I'm proud of you for doing that stuff.
Well, I appreciate that. It's very flattering. I'll never forget when the movie was out at the Man Chinese Theater in Hollywood. And again, it was out for, I think, one night, maybe two nights. And that was it. It was gone. I'm on the Sunset Strip. And I remember looking down about 2-3 blocks. And I thought of the very first meeting I had with an agent when I first got out to LA. I mean, I didn't know anything. All I knew was I needed someone to help. Manager, agent. I didn't even know what those titles meant. I just knew I needed someone to kind of guide me through.
Yeah.
Guy comes into the restaurant with his wife, you know, two couples, they have dinner, seems very normal, very, very friendly, comes over to me at the bar and gives me his card. He says, give me a call. You have a good look, something, you know, a nice way about you. You know, are you an actor? Yeah, good, give me a call. Go in a couple days later. He asks me to come in with the first red flag. And there was something about the whole thing that just didn't... I couldn't quite put my finger on it. There was something amiss, but I just couldn't...
But you're excited, right? You're going to an agent.
Sure, sure. I mean, this might be the springboard that, you know, shoots me into the stratosphere. You know, this guy is... He's in the industry. He's an agent. So I get to his office, and he asked me to come in at like 5:30. So it's...
very late.
It is a little late in the day. I mean, everyone in L.A. sort of done at 5, you know, that's it. It's time to go to the bar up the street and try to make contacts, you know, with your business cards. So as I was coming in, his secretary was going out, and his secretary was a very attractive 22-year-old guy with a tight shirt on.
Oh.
You know, and so he walked by me, and I walked in. No one else in the office, very quiet, go in. It was at least opulent. His office, he looked like he was somebody.
Okay.
He ushers me into his office. He gives me a bottled water. It was Evian. Sit down on the leather couch, and he proceeds to sort of sell me who he is. You know, he's done this, he's done that, et cetera, et cetera. he asks me a little bit about myself. I tell him my backstory. And then he sort of cuts me off and he says, well, look, this is what it boils down to. In this business, you have to be willing to do some things you're not quite maybe comfortable with.
Didn't he tee it up with, like, how bad do you want it?
Yes.
Am I getting
No, you're right. It was all couched in this kind of, you know, if you've got what it takes, it isn't just about talent, kid.
It's how
far are you willing to go?
Right.
How far are you really willing to go?
Yeah.
So he says, okay, look, I'm gonna try this. This is a little exercise I do with my new recruits here. He's got an ashtray on the coffee table. He says, see this ashtray? I said, yes. It's not an ashtray. It's not? No. It's a plate of dog crap. Okay? You see it? I said, okay. My heart starts just a little bit. You know, now I'm like, okay.
Do I have to lick this ashtray?
Right. Where are we going with this, right? Yeah. He says, puts it in front of me, and he says, okay, I'm going to give you a role in Saving Private Ryan.
That was the movie you picked?
And he says, no, I'm going to give you the role of Private Ryan, Matt Damon, right? I'm going to give you his role. All you have to do is eat what's on that plate. What do you do? Right?
Man.
And now I sort of figure out where is this going?
Are we talking in code or?
He's talking cryptically. We're definitely talking in code. Then he says, if I told you what some of the budding young actors, names that you know, people I know that are on their way up right now, the climbers, if I told you what they had to do, you might think it's a little icky, but out here, it's required. It's kind of like that thing in Glengarry Glen Ross. He's like, good father, who cares? You know, family man, get out of here. Right. Nice guy. Right. It's like, you got to eat the plate of crap. Right? That's what you got to. So I know that there's sexual innuendo going on at this point. Okay. Mm. And he's bald. He's a 52-year-old guy. My mind is going to these places where I see myself in therapy like 20 years later. Like, it's still about, you know, like they're powdering my nose. I'm on the set, but the nightmares are like hitting up, you know, like I've got tics, you know, like I'm in the chair, but they're like, Ray, are you ready? I'm like, oh, give me my pills. Right. So as I realize what's happening, now I've drank half my water's half gone. I'm thinking maybe he drugged me. Right. And in my own mind's eye, when I replay the whole thing, the way that it played out, my ego preservation way of sort of looking at it, I feel like I stood up and on principle I said, you know what? I'm gonna be ethical. You know, I'm gonna stick to my guns and try to earn it. Goodbye, sir. Walked out. What I think I probably said was, help me, mommy. Like, I think I started shaking. I mean, I think I don't remember how I got out there. I think I said something about like the meter's running, but I got the hell out of there as fast as I could.
When that happened, I thought you'd said, hey, if we're talking about exchanging these particular favors, you can count me out. And he said something like, no, those actors that I mentioned, they weren't giving the favor, they were receiving.
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 Yeah, night and day.
Did that happen or did
night,
I?
You're right.
Was that different?
Night and day. Okay. Night and day. Yeah, I mean, in that case. Okay, so you're not going to stick a scythe through my stomach. You're just going to hit me over the head with a baseball bat.
Right.
You can handle that.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was kind of the beginning, and then at the very end was the movie, and then law school started, so.
Well, like I always say, end on eating dog crap. That's.
And on that note, I think we're gonna wrap up our show. Listen, I want to thank you. You drove 5 hours to come to the show. When I thought of doing this, I said to my brother-in-law, I said, I really want to do a podcast, and he said, do you have anyone in mind? And I said, yeah. There's one person in mind in particular that I really feel like, you know, we have a history, and I think that we'll volley it back and forth, and hopefully it'll be entertaining, and we could tell some stories. He's a great yarn spinner.
Oh, man.
And I just, you know, you did the same thing recently. You drove 5 hours for my 40th birthday. That meant a lot to me, too. I mean, you drove farther than anybody. And I just want you to know I'm profoundly touched. I mean it. And really, I mean, you think about it. So you've driven 20 hours. You could be in L.A. 20-hour drive. You could be, yeah.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah, yeah. So think about that.
I never stop.
But they say that the best laid plans of mice and men often go astray. I don't think this went astray. And I don't know who the mouse or the man is in this equation. I'm the man. But it just means a lot to me that you did this with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. I'm... I'm thrilled, man. I'm your biggest fan, and so thank you.
Likewise, likewise. Hopefully, we can do this again.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's going to do it for us. This has been thrilling for me. We were a little tired because my girlfriend's flight came in a little late last night. They lost her baggage again too somehow, but I think we soldiered through.
Yeah,
and
only scratched the surface. So
yeah. Hopefully, we can do this again. So we'll talk next time.